So good evening, everyone. Welcome back. This is class 5 out of 6. However, next week we will not have Discovering Buddhism with Hemant because Venerable Rabina will be here and she'll be teaching that Monday night. That's her first night that she's here. And so we will round out this module the following Monday, which is the 24th. Okay. I am working on getting the homework and a resource page because Hemant's been great about giving us all kinds of resources. So look for that coming online. It will be on the Discovering Buddhism page at the Kadampa Center website under the Presenting the Path part. And I think that's all other than maybe silent cell phones. And don't forget that there is childcare available for those of you that need it. And is there anything else I need to say? Okay, let's get started.
Yeah? Okay, good. There you go. All right. Again, guys, just remember why we prostrate, okay? Nothing to do with prostrating to something. It is all about your mind and being humble. And some symbols and gestures are purely training yourself and reminding of what you're doing. Okay, this is just part of the practice. And when you humble, you open yourself up like that pot. Remember, you want to be open. You want to receive the teaching. So it's a good thing. I remember as a child in India, that when you entered a temple or a holy place, there was a bell. And you ring the bell. And my mother used to always say that, when you ring the bell, you leave the outside out, and now you are in this space. So it's a great line of demarcation as you bow down that you are in a class or you are in a gampa. Wonderful way of doing those things, okay? So, great. Again, we'll start with our typical meditation, right? Good to always calm yourself. We come from different environments, job, work, telephones, home, and plans. But for this next hour and a half, you're here. You choose to be here. You came here. So, first of all, thank you for even being here, and that tells you the state of mind that you wanted to be here. That's a wonderful place to be. So with that, you already know how we do this, okay? So go ahead and get your back straight, okay? Obviously, if you're seated in a chair, keep your feet flat. If you're seated on the cushion, you want to either half a lotus or full lotus position. Relaxed arms, armpits, okay, not so tight. And then your right hand over your left hand and your thumbs are touching each other. Creates a nice circle of energy. Okay, your head is slightly tilted forward. Relaxed jaw and mouth. Your tongue is touching behind the top part of your teeth on the top palate. And your eyes are either slightly open or closed for those who want to close them. The reason they tell you to keep it slightly open is to ensure that you're aware of your surrounding, but your mind is focused so you don't fall asleep, right? Because closing the eyes is very easy to do. And then you get this sense of tiredness or sleepiness. So that's the reason for that. And then just stay there and focus on your breath, in and out, as it's coming out of your nostril or you're inhaling, feel that sensation, and the idea is to concentrate. You're concentrating on your breath. It is neutral, has no story to it. You do it all the time, and the idea is that if your mind starts to wander, it's a great neutral place to come back. You just gently let the mind go, the story go, and say, okay, bring it back to the breath. And just stay there for a minute or two. who set the motivation next. Well, here we are again. Please notice you're still alive. So let's just be delighted that we are still alive. Due to the gas tank of morality that we spend so much energy on, and time and effort, filling in last life, which is the main cause of even why our breath continues to go in and out. Not because you're healthy. Those are just, that's not the main reason. It's a secondary reason. The main reason is the past morality and the main cause of having a life and main cause of having a wish to practice a spiritual path is from incredible practice in the past. There are many aspirations, many wishes, a strong understanding of morality, of benefiting others. And this is why we are sitting here right now, thinking of karma, about life, about helping others. How amazing. And how tragic it would be to waste this opportunity. So how to get the essence from it, as they would say, is to use it. To express our reliance upon Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, the triple gem. And our wish to use this life to make an altruistic motive, to use it to achieve enlightenment, which means, so I can become a Buddha. So I can be of a spontaneous benefit to others. To fully develop my true nature of empathy and love for others. To have the compassion that wants to benefit others. Mixed with wisdom that knows how. This is what a Buddha is. And this is our nature, our potential. So may the action of continuing to listen to the Buddha's teachings, this Lam Rim, cause exactly that. Thank you. Okay. Do you guys find it helpful when I go through the previous classes? I'm going to speed up, like I'm not going to go all the way to the one and then go through real details up to them. I'm not going to do that, but at least I want to continue for you to link in your mind how things are connected and how Lam Rim is. And we've been talking about the three scopes and how it's a junior school and a middle school and a high school. So the analogies aside, the idea is, it is presented to you. All these 84,000 teachings are presented to you in such a beautiful way that you can follow and put your mind to actually work and practice. Okay? So having said that, let's start with what we did, I think, in the class 1 and 2 just very quickly. I'm just going to go through the slides. Okay? The first class, we obviously went through Buddha's three turning of the wheels, who Lama Atisha was, the linear teachers, and so forth, right? So we went through that. And then we got into understanding, we got into some definitions, which we'll go through in a minute. We tried to understand qualities of Buddha. It was very important for us to know that while we talk about Buddha, and we talk about suffering and death and the lower realms, the point is that we are on a journey to become a Buddha. So it's important to know what Buddha is and what are his qualities, correct? So that's why we defined what the qualities of the Buddha was. We also went through the Lam Rim scopes a couple of times, and then we talked about the three preliminary contemplations. And I used the word, these are the primers. You should constantly think about this and settle with it. Everything we talk about, really, if you really think about it, majority of these sessions, in some way or the other, is related to your mind, right? And then we talked about need for a spiritual teacher, precious human rebirth, right? Why is it precious? We are born, we are here. It's precious, look where you are sitting today. Okay? It's precious because you come to recognize the urgency of some of these things. We have a chance to practice Dharma. We have a chance to change our minds. We have a chance to turn this karma around for our next rebirth or no birth for some. Right? Right, Sandra? Okay. And then we talked about death and impermanence. Remember, death is, we'll go over that very quickly, but you'll have to understand the three aspects of the death. And one is, time is uncertain. It's going to happen. Right? And it's definite. Time is uncertain, and we need to prepare. Don't ignore it. It's part of your life. Don't live in denial. Oh, it's going to happen later on. I'm not worried about it today. You know, live day at a time, that kind of stuff. Kind of have it in front of you. It's just a great reminder that life will go on. And if you want to live your life in a better dimension, a better state of mind, then you need to do some practice. And that's why we are here, learning the path. Okay? And we went through that process. Okay? We talked about the four gross elements that go, then the subconscious goes, and the important piece is that right after the four gross elements go, we see a flat line and we think the person is gone. And what they would say in Buddhism is to wait, do some prayers, still maintain a good environment, do some positive prayers. That's not only for human beings, but also for animals. They find comfort in that. It's a good thing to do. Then we talked about the six realms. It's important to understand that these are, when we talk about these realms, these are dimensions. This is not, I particularly don't know if this is a planet like Mars somewhere, you know, but it's a dimension, it's a state of mind. Okay? It's possible. It could be somewhere, but it's a state of mind. If you have very bad state of mind before you pass, you could wind up in the lower realms. If you have a lot of desire, you could wind up in an upper realm. The goal is to get out of this cycle in the first place. And remember, all of these realms, your karma will run out. You know, you enjoy for a long time in a desire realm. You have everything you ever wanted, but you're not practicing because you are totally craving and grasping for all those luxuries. Then what happens when that karma runs out? Back in the cycle again, right? So your goal should always be looking to completely be liberated and ultimately reach enlightenment. Okay? And then once you recognize the importance of these teachings, and if you feel that this is a good, this is really good, this really helps you, this helps me, and what Buddha is saying is really powerful, then you want to commit to it, right? Unless you commit to it, you're learning intellectually, but commitment plays a big role. And we talked about taking vows and not taking vows. If you don't take vows, you can still do good things. But a person that is committed and takes vows, it is in the mindstream at all times, so you create tremendous merits. Tremendous amount of merits. So it's a good thing. Besides, we kind of like ourselves, don't we, make commitments all the time? For I want to go to school. I'm going to learn this. I'm going to buy that. Then we do all the preliminary work. Look at the bank accounts. We look at this, how I can do this, what can I sell. We do it all the time. But when it comes to spiritual growth, we somehow put it in the bucket. I can't feel it. I don't touch it. I don't know about it. I'm not sure about it. That's what happens. So you need to come to terms with that first. Okay? And that's why you need to make sure those three preliminaries are always in your mind. The Buddhism really walks you through. And what it's really fascinating is that you manage it. You are the boss. Nobody is telling you what to do. You think this is the way it is. Get your own speed and commit to it. If you really want to grow and do these things and realize things, these things, right? So it's really nice in that way. Okay? And then, of course, we talked about refuge, which is what we just talked about, taking vows, taking refuge. You take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. You understand this, you want to really learn, you're serious about it, and you will say, okay, Buddha, teach me. And how are you going to be learning? Through Dharma. dharmas are all, dharma is your teaching. It becomes part of your life. Okay? And then we obviously have the sangha. The ordained teachers are here, right? And in the general, the larger community is here. So then that's your triple gem that you rely on. Just like a mother, a child goes to the mother for refuge. When they need something or they want a little love, they run to the mother, don't they? Well, this is where you go for refuge if you want to practice dharma. Some of the analogies they say is if Buddha is the doctor, dharma is the medicine, and the sangha are the nurses. So that's how you can take a look at it, right? Right? Okay? So, there it is. Okay, then we talk about, it's good to sometimes know these words, right? We always, when you read your wisdom energy, and I'm hoping everybody is reading it, and if you're not, you should be. Really, if you're serious about it. It's a wonderful book. Some people have told me they have read many books, but they really, really like the wisdom energy. Right, Gary? It's a great book. Easy read. There are other, if you look at the three aspects of the path, they really get a little deep in some areas, right? They'll get into tenets and other things. But when you want easy read and just want to understand what these three aspects are and why they are important, Wisdom Energy is a really friendly book. A small book, doesn't take a long time, and I guarantee you once you start it and you get into it, you'll finish it. But I think it's very important that you read it. Okay? The reason I say that, you'll see these words, the absolute, relative, ultimate. You see this kind of words all the time, and sometimes the mind gets stuck on what that even means. And that's why in the last couple of classes we defined, remember, we defined nirvana, we defined samsara, we defined ignorance, okay, we defined omniscience, omnipotent, all of these words. Why? Because they show up all over the place. And if you don't understand the basic meaning of that and how it impacts all these different chapters, then you're lost sometimes. You get so far into the reading, saying, I'll get back to it. And you're so far into it, and you lost some fundamental meaning of it. So it's good to know those words. So absolute. When you talk about absolute or relative, when you talk about relative, you're talking about historical Buddha. Relative Buddha, Sakyamuni Buddha, in terms of history. When was he born? Where was he born? He was a prince, that kind of stuff. When you talk about absolute, you're talking about that omniscience mind, the omnipotent mind, the perfect, the all-knowing nature of Buddha, right? That's the absolute, primordial nature of Buddha. That's what you're talking about. Same thing with Dharma. Okay, when you talk about Dharma from relative perspective, you're talking about the discipline, vinaya, they call it, how to live, how to take vows, how to do commitments, how do monks live, how do nuns live, like that. Then there's another basket, they call three baskets, abhidharma. Don't worry about those words. Abhidharma is another way, mind training. And then there's a third one called sutra. When you do this regular reading and all that, just simple little snippets of things are sutras. So these three ways the teachings are done. So that's how you look at it. When you talk about absolute, it's realizations. When you read these things, then when you really meditate on it and you come to realization, wow, that's what it is. That's the absolute nature of that dharma. Yeah, one thing to say, I won't do it. Now you haven't done it and you see the value of it. It's like, oh wow, that was amazing. Absolute nature. Okay, same thing in sangha. You can see the ordained monks around you, and you are thinking about the relative sangha. When you talk about the absolute sangha, you're talking about the Arya beings, people who have liberated themselves from the cyclic existence. They know wisdom. They have the chatterbox is gone. There is no negative karma left. And they're on their way to complete liberation. Those are Arya beings at a much different level of beings than just the normal mundane living and practicing. So that's the difference between absolute and relative. Okay? It's also used in emptiness classes sometimes. Relative, ultimate. Relative is conventional. And then what we do every day, I am here, you are there, this is a desk, this is a book, that's conventional. When you talk about absolute, we look at the real nature of how things exist. And we'll talk about that a little bit today. Okay? Okay, we ended the session, I think, too, with the understanding of samsara and the rebirth. Cycle of life and death is called samsara. We talked about the refuge. And we consistently bridged everything according to Lambrim. Remember the lower scope, the middle scope, and the large scope. And the way reason for that breakdown is so you start to understand and build upon the subject matter. You don't want to go straight to compassion and tantra when you don't even know what a human rebirth is. It's as simple as that. It's organized. Okay? And also it keeps you on the path. Very nicely graduated path. So easy going, very nicely taught, and it's organized. Then we got into karma. We're still in the lower scope of things. Okay, we talked about karma. Big subject. If you think about it, it impacts every aspect of what we do in this cycle. Karma. So what do we know about karma? Karma is cause and effect. Action. Of body, speech, and mind. Not just playing racquetball is a karma, okay? It's also your mind. So when we say practice something, really, we all know, we formalize ourselves, but what's going on inside is absolutely important. Okay? The working cause of effect, okay? So then the positive, obviously, positive karmas ripens in a positive, in your happiness. Negative karma, your next fruition is harmful or negative or not so good. Okay? Discontent. Okay? So there it says, though we think of karma as something that we can see on a short-term time scale, instant or days or months, Buddhism sees as occurring over lifetimes. Okay? So what we will talk about it a little bit in our discussion here too. It is a natural law. This is not somebody manufactured. Buddha says, believe or don't believe. That's the way it is. It's like gravity. Newton discovered gravity, according to our books, but gravity was always there. He just worked on it, found out, learned about it, experimented with it, and said, yep, it works. I can prove it. That's how Buddha is saying. Law of karma. It is not just a dogma from one side. That's the way things are. And if you really think about it, just think about it sometimes when you're on your own, how does it work? And you wonder why some people die early, and if somebody is healthy and it goes like that, some people live 410 years old, some people are so poor and all of a sudden the lottery comes and they are millionaires, some people are millionaires and are in jail for 25 years. What happens? Why? You will see how karma functions. It is not random. There is cause and there is effect. Okay?
Can I say something?
Yes.
Like Mandela or any political leader.
So if we say karma, put them in the jail, so many political leaders went into jail.
Sure.
But they went for a good reason.
Fine.
Right?
So if that, I mean, we can discuss that in so many angles. If their intent was positive, and that means going to jail, even a lot of holy people, Christ died on a cross. Right? There's just so many ways people say why. It is, there are so many reasons and intent behind this, but if the karma was to go to jail, but then the outcome was that many people then really wanted him out and they really saw him, then it had an impact on it. You don't know what his past life was that caused this action for his ultimate goal that the karma had to ripen. So there are so many ways. We have an example of people like Tycho and Guy from Exxon living a great life, 25 years of jail. Right? You see people who are very poor, but they get a lot of respect and a lot of gifts. Then there are a lot of rich people and doing so well. And you wonder how come this this kind of person is such a, has such a good life, but then nobody respects them either. So many combination is based on your previous life. And you remember, it is linear in, to a certain extent, but it's not like, I do this, so I get that, that's fine. But multiple things are going on in body, speech, and mind. So if by the time you die, if you had done a lot of moral activity, good things, generous, morally, you may get a human life. But if your mind over a lifetime had created other karma that had some negativity in it, and that's what went with you, then you can have trouble while you are a human next life. There are many factors. It is not that simple, and this is an entire module in itself, karma. Okay, and you'll go into detail, but at least you know this is how karma works. They are saying it is not random, cause and effect. Nobody creates, sits there and says, oh, I want you to have a good life, and I want you to have a bad life. I don't like you, I like you, nothing like that. You are the boss. You create your own future. You create your own next life, and you have complete ownership of that. So that is the urgency of precious human life, is because we take this opportunity to do something about it. We all have habits. We all are here. That's why we are here. We all have certain tendencies. We all have certain habits. Recognize them. See if they fall into virtuous category. They fall into negative or non-virtuous category. And then there are plenty of practices to slowly turn them around. Okay? And you work on them. It's not, I was telling Sandra, nothing is like a switch turned on and now I'm just going to be this nice speechy guy, right? No, it's not like that. These are primordial nature. We have had for many lives, but something triggers it so quickly, but you will recognize it. Ah, there it comes. You can do something about it. Maybe I want to walk away. Maybe even if it's so against my nature, I'm going to keep quiet. You start to work with it. It's not easy, but you can take small steps. And we talked about that. Practice for an hour. I will not curse. I will not be mad at somebody. Don't say I'll never do it. Try small. Try small and see. And I told you, even you can see, go to sleep. You can have 8 hours of doing practicing. You know, I'm just kidding. You can do so many little things that can slowly, slowly get into your system. And then when you do your practice, when you are meditating, when you're sitting, you're analyzing those things. How did you do? What did you do? How did it make you feel? Was it done truly from inside your heart? Was it still fighting you? Work on it. And eventually, even recognizing that this is my tendency, you've taken a huge step. That is the change. You're changing over. Think about it. Right? So it's not like you're going to take these 20 things and by next Sunday, 12 o'clock, I'm liberated. It would be great if you can. But let's be a little more real in this world, right? And talk about that. And you can really work it that way. Okay? So, at least you guys should know by now 10 non-virtuous actions. Right? You should know these 10 non-virtuous actions. This is not something you're going to see it again and again and again. When Venerable Robina comes, she might talk about this. Okay? She's going to talk about karma a little bit. So listen to it. A lot of the examples that I have taken, a lot of the readings I've taken in this particular module comes from her. There are others too, but I'm just letting you know that a lot of that has come from that, from her. So you'll hear some of these things, but you should know these things. Okay, then how does karma ripen? How does karma come to play, right? It's very important. So the fully ripened result, what does that mean? So when you do something, and let me go through this, my own notes here. Natural law. Okay. Fully ripened result, what does that mean? If you sow the seed, you get the fruit. Right? Example, the type of rebirth your consciousness will take when it leaves this body at the time of death. Past virtuous life, human rebirth. That kind of stuff. So that's called fully ripened result. Then the action similar to the cause. This is another way karma ripens. In other words, past anger, if you had tendency of being angry all the time, you'll have basically some tendency this life to be angry too. It just goes with you till you knock it out. Okay? Also, a lot of these seeds that you sow sometimes multiplies because you are in a habit and it just kind of perpetuates itself. Okay? Until you make a conscious decision, I'm going to cut it out. I'm going to work on it. And that's what they're telling you. You can work on this. That's the good news, right? We always talk about suffering and death and all that. It's good to recognize that. But here's the news. You can do something about it. Okay, the next one is the experience similar to the cause. You will experience a situation similar to the cause. Right? So if you lie a lot or steal a lot, and that's your tendency, you may take a birth, but people around you like to do that. And that means you become a recipient too sometimes, right? If you're surrounded by people who steal and lie, then guess what? They're doing that to you. You're in that environment. And then the last one is what we call collective or environmental karma. And this is a larger place. You think of so many people born in an area where there's always earthquakes, always floods, always war going on, famine all the time. Just happened to be born there to those parents. Be in Sahara Desert somewhere, and there's no water.
Can you say that we also have collective karma because we're here at the same time?
It's possible. I'm just saying that if there is a majority of a people in the same type of environment doing the similar thing, there is a chance that you could be brought together or similar type of causes bring you together, right? There are many people all over the place that do certain things, but at some point the next life, you are in a place where the karma is in that situation, right? So it can be here. If you are sitting here collectively, yes, I would tend to say there is a collective karma. We are sitting here talking about dharma. You have some virtuous seeds in you. That's a wonderful thing. We talk about negative, but don't forget, the flip side is the positive side. You've done many good things in past life to be here in human form, sitting here, at least inquiring about dharma. Or curious to know, or wanting to learn. That's a very positive thing. So karma works both ways, okay? Right? So you should be familiar with how the karma ripens. Know what karma is, know how it ripens, and know how to purify karma. You should at least know this and at least know your 10 non-virtuous action, because opposite of that is virtuous action. Right? So, okay, then this is a couple of things we need to, this is to how the conditions that bring the fully ripened result into action, right? How it comes up. So one thing to think about is we talked about that ant, remember? The example of the ant. To be fully ripened, you have to have motivation or intent to do something, really hurt something. That's your intent, I want to hurt something. Now, think about the object. The object has to be there, and the action has to take place, and the result has to be there. Now, this will probably get into a lot of subtleties, right? We cut grass, we have critters in the house, so many mites that comes up. I would suggest that rather than dwelling very deep into it, we have a separate conversation, or we can even bring in Geshe La or Geshe Sangpo. And you'll see in some cases, if the harm is larger, then you have no choice. There are examples of a person in a boat with 50 people. He sees this guy, sees that this guy is going to kill all 50 people. He takes a gun and kills the guy. Did he commit a bad karma? So karma is done. He killed somebody. His intent was to save 49 others. Maybe a different level of karma. I'm not here to debate good, bad, and ugly, but I would say the intent was different than saying, I'm just going to kill everybody because, you know what, I don't like you. Right? Different level. Or a person that kills the ant by mistake. Still killing took place. Object was there, but the intent wasn't there. So you gotta work with that a little bit. And when you get into karma classes in detail, they will get into some very some nice details on that. And when even Venerable Ramina comes, feel free to talk about these things and they'll give you some ways. Lama Zopa Rinpoche thinks about it. He does little prayers. You should try to get rid of it as best as you can. Sometimes if you can't do it, then that is something you have to work in your mind. You can do prayers. You can do certain nice things and then do your activity. But be thinking that these are also living sentient beings called Sem-Sem, mind possessors. Okay? That's where I want to end with that. But something to think about. Certainly, a lot of questions come up in the mind. Okay? We have to talk about tendencies and habits. We are so used to it, we don't even realize it. Some things we even do with and call it sports. And we have no clue we are harming things, left and right. Right? But we've been trained to say, oh, that's just fun. They even make excuses, oh, I'm going to use this and that. But and I'm not going one way or the other. Think of the intent, think of what you're doing and what it means. Look at the last piece of mind before anything dies, human or animal, and what is in front of them and what they're we're doing. So it's important to know that. It's very powerful to understand your innate habits. We do things like a magnet. We don't even realize that it's wrong or right. We just do it. So you have to recognize these things. It's spontaneous, second nature. We need to think about this. Habits can blind us. And we may not even see that harm we are doing, which we just talked about. Okay? How karma works. We also recognize that karma runs out. It's just like the gasoline that we filled in. Whatever you fill in, when it's used up, it runs out. You know, it's not luck. You know, you wonder why, oh, it's just the way it is. It's luck. I'm unlucky. It just happens to me. You know, none. There's a cause and effect. Cause and effect. That's what karma says. Okay? And there are causes for everything. And then we talked about why good things happen to bad people and why bad things happen to good people. It is not just one karma works and then the rest kind of wait. It's not like that kind of mixture of things working together, how karma comes to play. It's important how you lead your life, how you practice it, what happens before you're passing on to the next life, and what is the seeds, that those imprints that you will carry. Okay? So it's not a hit or a miss. And then the good news. We can purify this. So this is important to know, the four opponent powers. We did meditation last class on the four opponent powers with the Vajrasattva practice. So here they are. They're called the four R's. Very important. If you are looking for a tool, right? Okay, I do these things all the time. I sometimes steal, sometimes I lie, sometimes I have very bad thoughts about somebody. How do I purify? How do I work this? What do I do to purify? These are your four R's. They're called the four opponent powers. You'll hear this all the time in many classes, in many ways. So when somebody says four opponent powers, you should be familiar with them. The first one is regret. So let's talk about that a little bit. What is regret? Regret is something you recognize you did something wrong. And you feel bad that you did it. But here's the difference. Okay? Before I start that, all of these four opponent powers, they work more powerfully if the intensity of your thought is strong. How intensely you regret is important. All of these four R's. Okay? You can't say, well, I kind of feel bad. It's a little different than really making a determination. That's bad. It's really in you a little bit. That's intensity. Right? So let's talk about that. So what is regret? You feel that you've done something wrong. You really regret it. You say those things. And then you strongly acknowledge regretting it. for your own sake. This is not guilt. A lot of people equate this to guilt. I'm horrible. Oh my gosh, I'm doing such a bad thing. And you sit in the corner, get depressed. That's not what it's talking about. Regret is different. Regret is, you've taken a poison, you recognize that was stupid, I want to go see a doctor now. Take some action. Do something about it. Okay, don't go into this mindset of poor me. But whenever there is a guilt, what happens is there is an acknowledgement. People want, have some pity. People are looking for pity. Please support me. Please say I didn't do something wrong. I'm really not that bad, am I? We are looking for that acknowledgement. That is ego-driven. It's insecure feeling. A regret is a person that takes charge. That says, I won't do it again. That was not right. Move on. Okay? A little different, right? So you don't want to be in that state of mind. So here it is. The next thing is reliance. So how do I take care of this? I have a regret. What can I do about it? Well, we have the teachings. Gives you all kind of tools. It's even telling you here how to purify it. So we rely on Buddha's teachings. Right? It's telling you how mind works. It tells you how karma functions. It tells you how to purify it. What kind of practices to do. How can you relate to a teacher. And it's about creating a practice to do that. Right? So, and remember, it's not somebody that's purifying you. It's not Buddha that's going to say, okay, you ask for forgiveness. I bless you. It's purified. He's saying, I will show you the way. I can guide you. But you do it. Okay? That's what makes this, to me, very powerful. Third is a remedy. Third R. So, a couple of things you can do. You can certainly do mantras. You can do prostrations. You can do purification. But why not mix it with actions? If you have said something or harmful thing or said a bad, something too bad, you can apologize. If you've taken something, maybe you can donate, give, be generous somewhere else. Do the opposite to help yourself. If you're angry at somebody unnecessarily and you are practicing, try to be kind somewhere. Be kind to that person or somewhere else, practice it. So it negates the anger. So it's saying do both. When you're practicing and doing mantras, you are training your mind. You are having conviction in your mind. By saying that I am going to purify it, that means you're committed, you're regretting and you're committed to doing something about it. So, remedy. Okay? And last but least, resolve. You heard this word all the time. We have a resolve to do this, right? It's a strong determination not to do it again. Okay? Strong determination. But I also mentioned to you earlier, if you cannot just quickly go out of the room and now all of a sudden you have a resolve, you'll never do it again. Try small dosages at a time. Just work on it. And it will eventually get into your mind stream. Okay? So now, we come to the 12 links. We started this last time. So when you're doing this, guys, consistently put that bridge. Remember we started the bridge, we were going to go to New York and we don't want to be stuck in Hoboken, the class number one, right? I want you to create that bridge. How, what you've been going through. And do you understand the concept of mind? What is mind? What is really mind? What is precious human life? What is karma? Why is death and impermanence important? Nothing is permanent. Everything changes, including karma. If things were stagnant, it would not change. It would not move. There is no reason to do anything because it's stagnant. Everything changes. That's what allows us to change. That's what allows us, our mind, to change our minds, right? How everything, look around you, there is nothing you can call permanent. Everything has changed going on at some level. at atomic level and even at subatomic level at nanoparticles. And when they find Higgs boson, they'll find other particles. Right? They're already saying mesomeres and basomeres and all these kind of things. They're finding even nano. And there are partless particles. But there's cause and situation. Before something happens, something else happened for it to happen. Okay? So anyways, if we have the ability to change our mind. So in the 12 links, we actually went halfway, but I'll just quickly cover what we talked about. I want you to just quickly pay attention to these are the 12 links. What this is what brings us in the cycle of birth and death. This is what makes us come back and take rebirth and go out and come take rebirth. And this is what keeps us going in circle. What is the purpose of learning this? Not only you understand what brings you in samsara, samsara full of suffering, many dimensions, remember the realms and all those things. It's not a happy place in that way. However, you can get out of this. And the point of these 12 links is to not only know how samsara is linked and how things come back and forth, but to create an aspiration in your mind to get away from this, to go in a better, to be in nirvana, to be liberated, to be enlightened. So you aspire to renunciate all the activities that cause you to be in the circle. This is your first point of renunciation. Renunciation is not leaving your home, dropping your car, and now wearing a different color clothes and being a certain way. It's none of that. You can certainly do that if that helps you. Whatever helps you. Renunciation is a mind that is determined that these things, these delusions, these afflictions, is I want to get rid of them, and my really goal is to become enlightened. That is your goal. You're on a speed train to doing that. And how you can do these things to knock this out. But this is the reason we keep coming back. That's why 12 links are talked about. Okay? I'm going to go flip to one slide and then come back to this. And there's a reason for this slide. I took this from page 106 for all those people that have diligently read our Wisdom Energy book. This one, the requirement on page 106. And the reason I brought this slide up is because when we talk about emptiness, okay, which is not the subject, deeper subject right now, but I'll just give you a little snippet of that. When we talk about ignorance, and ignorance is not knowing the true nature of I or self and not knowing how things exist, we don't see the reality the way it exists. And we also have this fabricated part of this existent, independent I in ourselves. Okay? So then I'm thinking, okay, but Buddha also says, our teachings and our teachers also say, there is no exaggerated independent I, and there is also not nothing. There is no nihilism. It's not everything is just, there's nothing. There's a middle way. So my mind was, what is that thing? Then what is that I? That's why I brought this up. Now you take a look at it, okay, and read. So this is the I that exists in dependence upon the body and mind, this package, body and mind, I. It performs actions, creates karma, and experiences those results according to the law of cause and effect, karma, as described by the 12 links, what causes us in samsara to go in and out. Such an I is not truly independent, but it is part of a long continuum of action and reaction. So think about it for a second, guys. Sounds very wordy. You need to think about this. But there is no independent I, and we'll talk about that in a minute, that there's nothing concrete. When you look at this body, hands, meat, bones, cells, you don't find an I in there. Then we say, no, this is that package here. This is I. You know, we have to fight that in our head. And then you look at your brain, or your mind. Okay? Your mind is a continuum of thoughts. Previous thought, current thought will continue. Just a moment of thoughts. Right? And you can't find I in the mind either. There's no I, just thoughts moving around. So where is the I? So then they say, the subtle I that we are talking about is because we have delusions, and we have karmic imprints, and because we have ignorance, right, not knowing how things exist, this attachment is created, right? We are attached, and therefore we come back to this life again. We have grasping, craving, we have delusions, and so we take another birth. That carries that subtle I with you because it already is in the place of deluded mind. If you were perfect and clear and everything was completely annihilated, you would not be in this birth and death cycle. You would be liberated. Therefore, there would be no I. So you understand? A little subtlety is there. So that's why they're saying is, don't get into this complete nothing exists, and don't get into this fabricated I and everything is concretely the way it is. If everything was concrete, then there is no change. It would never change. So know these two views. And also understand this, that everything is dependent arising. You'll hear this word, dependent arising. Think of anything that has not a previous moment or another cause and condition for it to be there. Take a tree, take a plant, take a chair, take a anything. Somebody made it. Somebody polished it. Stone had to be found. Stone existed. Chemical reactions had to take place for that to become this particular. It goes on and on and on. Goes to the earth, then it's chicken and egg. Right? Everything. You look at a tree and say, oh, it's just a tree. Solid. I can see that beautiful tree. But if you think about it, it changes all the time. Fall season, spring season, new leaves come out, old leaves go away. So many animals live in it. The outer layer dies, the inner layer becomes the bark. It goes on. It was a sapling before. It was a seed before. It came from another fruit. The fruit came from another tree. It goes on and on and on. Everything is dependent arising. It's wonderful in Buddhism we also are interdependent. We have mother sentient beings. At some time or the other, we have helped each other. Many sentient beings around you, all of them helped you in one shape or form. When you have this understanding, you think about what happens to your mind before you get upset, before you want to point a finger. It's really, you can humble yourself very quickly because now it's not this concrete Sandra or Gary. If you understand how things exist, all of a sudden you realize who you are. Who are you? We have this beautiful label on ourselves, I. But if that is not there, then who it is? Who is it? And then you realize how we exist in this world. This is not to say conventionally, this is no Alex, this is Sandra, we can go around. This is to talk with each other, to communicate with each other, identify each other. That's perfectly fine. They are saying that's the subtle I. And we need to continue till the delusions go away. And then you are in perfect understanding of emptiness. At least for that, I just want you to see the two factors. And now we go back to the 12 links. But I thought it was a good segue to understand when somebody says, okay, be in the middle, fabricated I, then I don't exist. That's where the mind goes because our ego wants to see that. It wants to forget all this stuff. What's going on here? I want you to think about that a little bit, read a little bit, and I would suggest to you a couple of books, and if you are not reading, you should go to page number 105, actually 102 to 105, excellent reading on perceiving the nature of reality. You should read it. It will clear up a lot of confusion, any confusion, and really make you understand in very easy way what they are talking about. Okay? So now, I'll flip again to this, and I want you to read the bottom. This is in Wisdom Energy, page 107. So we typed it up, because it now talks to what we just discussed. And I want you to see, not even an atom of samsara or nirvana has any such thing as inherent existence. Nothing is inherently existing. It's always changing and it's dependent arising. Nothing is concretely by itself existing. That's the true nature of reality. Then it says, yet there is no fraud in saying that all of these atoms are dependent arising from cause and effect. So when we talk about this subtle I, we are here right now. That's because of previous causes and conditions, and our karma has been ripened into a human form, and we carry this delusion in our mind, otherwise we would be liberated. Some of you may be, and then you don't have to come back in this life cycle, but when we are here, we carry those seeds of karma. Therefore, that subtle eye carries those imprints with you. So there is that subtle eye, but it is not I independent of me, right? That I does not exist independent of this body and mind, and is just a separate entity. We have that tendency. Just think about it. When something happens, what pops up? When a fear comes up, what happens? The feeling you get, what is that? So kind of think about that. Okay, now having said that, let's go and finish the 12 links.
That's your question.
Yes.
So, I just heard you say, maybe I misheard, but I heard you say the little eye carries the karmic imprints.
Well, it is, that eye is there because we have karmic imprints from previous lives of, like, it says, when you read this, yet there is no fraud in saying that all of these atoms are dependent arising from cause and effect. So there is a, that those imprints are carried into that, subtle imprints are there. So something exists at a subtle level, but it is not as independent and concrete as we would think it is. That's all they're trying to say, the middle way. Not nothing exists, and not it exists concretely. And if you look at the top part, this the I that exists in dependence upon body and mind, which we're talking about, it performs actions, creates karmas and experiences. And it's not truly independent. It is part of a long continuum of actions and reactions. It is just that. Continuous actions and reactions. That is that subtle eye. And that's what exists. It's a difficult to put just wrap your mind around it, because you need time to think it through. You know, in a class, in 5 to 10 minutes, you can't get your mind to grapple this thought very quickly. But if you really, really think about simple things like dependent arising, everything, there is no concrete self. We are changing. Are you the same person you were 10 years ago? Are you the same person when you were in 10th grade? No. Things change. Everything is changing. Trees change. Life changes. History changes. Earth changes. Environment changes. And smallest particles change. Dependent arising. If things were concrete and existed, there is no movement. Okay? So that's all you need to know. So having said that, it starts by the fact it talks about that once you understand the 12 links, you generate this real under nature of renunciation. You want to have this conviction, I don't want to come through this pain again and again and again and again. I got to do something now. That generates an aspiration to renunciate some of these negative states of mind, the non-virtuous actions, to start turning your karma around. Okay? So that's what creates it. So that is called renunciation. The definition would be, from the depth of your heart, generate the spontaneous aspiration to liberate yourself. And this pure, spontaneous, constant aspiration to be free from samsara is renunciation. Remember the three principal aspects of the path. Renunciation, bodhicitta, and emptiness. Next class is bodhicitta, but I touched emptiness a little bit, and we touched renunciation. And this is why we need to renunciate, have complete understanding of how reality exists, who we are as in this body, speech, and mind, and understand that when you are in this cycle of birth and death, if I renunciate some of these things, I don't want to hurt, I don't want to kill, I don't want, and you start to work and practice, you are really renunciating. And Lama Yeshe very nicely says, just because you see a lot of monks wearing clothes, yes, they're trying. We are all trying. He makes it very easy. He doesn't make it so rigid. Okay, we don't do this, we don't do that. It's not. They have vows, and they try to live through it. Why? Because they're using these tools to renunciate and practice their path towards bodhis, becoming a bodhisattva. That's renunciation. Okay? All right, so first one that causes suffering is ignorance. We've talked enough about ignorance. It means not seeing. It means in Buddhism calls it the ego. It is with us all the time. And when you look at it, it grasps that thing. It makes you feel wonderful. It hurts you. It does that eye, does this stuff. And once you have that really big eye in you, then it becomes mine. Eye becomes mine. Mind becomes good, bad, and ugly. Then somebody takes that away. You're angry. So now you have attachment. And that attachment leads to aversion. It's a mild form of anger. Anger leads to then envy and doubt. And then jealousy and covetousness, and there you go. It creates, it starts. Because that very first thing is, you think I am here, and you're not going to do that to me. And bam, the ego comes up, and instead of loosening it up and walking away or dealing with it in a different way, we concretely feel personal insult, and then ready to go. How dare you, right? So that's the reason for it. So anyways, it says conventional I exists in dependence of body and mind. It performs the actions. We read that. And the mental factor that holds the wrong fabricated view of self is ignorance. That thought that I exist, that is ignorance. That's what it's saying. And that ignorance starts the attachment piece. So the next piece, I don't know if this is in there or not. I'll just go back. The next thing is, the second link is what they call karmic actions or volitional formations. These arise out of ignorance, the distorted karma of ignorance that leaves an imprint in your head. All these activities you do now because of ignorance. Mine, you can't tell that to me. Oh, I don't like him. She was really kind. All these things you do, mental actions, they leave those imprints in you now. What is good and what is bad, and according to your ego. Okay? And then what happens? It manifests in future life, right? Either favorable or unfavorable, depending on what, how you dealt with it. Then you have consciousness, third link. This is the continuum of your mind moments, right? Consciousness. Mind stream. Your thoughts going from one to another, to another, to another. And it just carries those imprints with it. Cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect, and some of those imprints stay with it. Things you've been doing all the time, stay with it a little bit. Okay? It's like the seed you sow. Okay? And then that starts with two of these desires. First link is craving. The second one is grasping. So the difference is this. Both of these are attachments. Craving and grasping. So when you crave for something, but then you grasp for something. Now think about that. Craving helps to ripen the karmic seeds. I like it. I really like it. It's a good feeling. And then when you're about to die, you grasp. Because you just got, what's going to happen? I need that. What's going to happen to my house? What's going to happen to my this? We're going to have that. That's called grasping. And it brings karma to completion. It really latches onto it. And it connects with our next life. This grasping. Okay? And then what happens? This is where we left. And the next one is called becoming. It's called the throwing karma. What that means is, another word, the karmic imprint that ripens at the time of death. So when you're grasping, these seeds become very strong and they ripen. And this is the karma that's going to now, propensity-wise, go out to the next life. Before it goes to the next life, it goes into that intermediate state of bardo. Bardo has its own body, they call it, a wind body, energy body. And though we think it's floating around, it is not as blissful as you think. It can have a lot of difficulties because there is no free will. It is driven by that karmic imprint. It is driven by that propensity of that particular imprint. So it is not always a wonderful feeling, but it will go and find a place very quickly where it can find that comfort of doing what it needs to do. Okay? So it's a little subtle level of mind. And then what happens? It goes and finds the egg and the sperm and think, there it is. It's going to go latch onto that. That's called the rebirth part. It's the link of rebirth is established as the moment the wind leaves the bardo and body enters the united cells of the parents, egg and sperm. Okay? But at the same time, even the mother's womb has to be ready for it. The egg has to be proper. The sperm has to be, so there are other things, obstacles. All these things have to work in a good way for a birth to really take place. Right? And there has to be this karmic connection between the three the egg, the sperm, the parents, and the child for that birth to take place. So there's these other connections that take place. So there's all of these things are happening. And then once that happens, name and form is the next eighth link, name and form. So the material substances that constitute the sperm and the ovum, that's called the form, and the consciousness now that dwells in it, the new rebirth, and that is called the name. That's what, this is the title. So think about this for a second. Name and form is another link. So we went through rebirth. And now the mind is on the egg and the sperm has come together. The mind is settled on it. So now it's about to be, a baby is about to come out. That particular, the materials or the sperm and the egg, they call that a name, and the baby taking place is called a form. Let me make sure. Material substances that constitute the sperm and the ovum are form. The consciousness that dwells within that material basis is called the name. Don't worry about it. It's simply, that's another link. Okay? Then what happens? Now the six senses start to develop. Baby is getting big. Okay? It develops into a mature functional state. Six senses come up. It's like the building being built now. Okay? And as soon as the six senses are there, the next link, tenth link, contact to the external world. Now that you have taken a birth, now you be all, this is all internally going on. Now the external world comes to view and you develop with the contact feeling. Good things feels good. Bad things feel bad. Right? Feelings are developed. So pleasant feelings and unpleasant feelings. And then life starts, aging and death. It starts to do. Now you're born. Six senses are there. You brought in those imprints with you. Now guess what? Some subtle level of that ignorance is with you. Attachments, good, bad, ugly, you start to work that again. And then all of a sudden you're back to that death cycle again. Again, it's propensity, it leaves grasping and craving takes place. You go into bardo, you take another birth. So till you clear and you have a pure yearning to renunciate this cycle and understand that you're going to work on some of your karmic actions and mind, you know, the mind afflictions or delusions, then you are taking steps to loosen the grip of samsara. Okay, the three poisons. Remember that from so many classes? We've been saying this. What are the three poisons that keep us really everything going? Absolutely. So ignorance, attachment, and aversion. Ignorance is the root cause. Right? It makes you then attached. I, meaning me, mine, then starts, I like it, I don't like it, aversion. And then anything that comes in the way, anger. See how the link is created. So these links are important in that way. Okay? So these are the 12 links. You need to contemplate on it and you need to understand it. And we're going to, before we do a meditation, the meditation may take 15, 20 minutes, maybe a minute or two behind if you have to leave to feel, but I need to cover this. There are three types of sufferings. Let's finish the suffering piece off real quick. There are three types of suffering. I love in Buddhism, there's always the six perfections, the eight this and the nine that. And so there are always a number, but that's because they are so exact. That is the beauty of it. They know exactly what it is. When we think of suffering, we can't even really define it. Oh, the pain I got. I was sick. Maybe that's the pain they're talking about. We can't even define it, but we can think about it. They are so exact. Three kinds of suffering. Suffering of suffering. Number one. It's the pain of birth, sickness, death, old age. You know the pains that go with it when you're sick, when you have a flu. Not happy. Right? When death comes, you're in the bed. That's not a happy feeling. So that's the suffering you're talking about. And suffering of suffering. Okay? Then the suffering of change. When things change. And it's very interesting in this one. They even equate the temporary happiness as suffering of change. So let me tell you why. When you sit in a hot climate, 80 degrees, it's amazing when you are in an air condition how that 80 degrees looks very nice. You run out. Now you sit there for 3 hours, what happens? I want to go back there in again. It's a temporary pleasure, right? It goes with the pain, it's dual. Okay? You can eat a chocolate. When you're first hungry and you see a chocolate, it's absolutely delicious. After you have a kick this big, what happens? No, not right now. So we always live in temporary happinesses, but it ultimately results in not a pleasant situation. It's always changing. So that's what they call suffering of change. I even think about jobs. When you first get that call, you got a job. How happy were you? Now think about the same experience 4 years later. Not the same. Same thing happens when you buy a new car, doesn't it? We love it, we wash it, we take care of it, look at it from different angles and say, oh, that's a great car. Till some of that big rock hits it first time. Then it's like, whoa. So it goes on all the time, right? So then the third one is all pervasive, compounding suffering. Because of our karmic seeds, but remember, all of these delusions cause this innate anxiety in us, right? We can't even enjoy sometimes a good vacation for the moment. Because even at the vacation, there's a little bit something biting in you like, oh, I got to go back. It's going to cost me so much money. Oh, when are we flying back again? You're always in some level of discomfort. You're not even in the place enjoying the moment, right? But there's a pervasive insecurities that we carry because of our lifestyles or whatever we do. We always have a little insecurity. What if? Insurance company loves this pervasive suffering. Oh, you know, they're always banking on your insecurity, right? So these are the three types of suffering, guys. You should know that. And the reason I went through that is the next meditation, I want you to pay attention how amazingly how we have progressed through Lambrim to a certain point, except for Bodhicitta, that we will cover next class. When you look at how we've taken steps in these little classes and how many little things we've talked about, all these things we've talked about, suffering, nature of suffering, impermanence, nature of mind, the three contemplations, human rebirth, auspiciousness of a teacher. When you think of the subjects that we have covered and the details we have covered, you will see that how you have progressed and the tools you have to contemplate on. So you already know the exercise when we say meditation. I want you to get in the meditative position right now. Jason, be comfortable, okay? Okay, this meditation is on renunciation. Relax your mind. Let all the thoughts just go out, kind of come in a stable mindset. Start by taking just a minute or two to focus on your physical body in a beneficial position, spine straightened, become present in the moment. Just do a minute or two of breathing exercise or meditation just to get your mind again very nicely comfortable and not going all over the place, just stabilizing it. Focus on your breath. Let's do motivation for this meditation. Create an altruistic motivation for this meditation session. Without developing a full renounced mind, there is no way at all to escape from the ocean of cyclic existence and thus to reach full enlightenment. We have been fumbling around in cyclic existence since beginningless time, suffering horribly and unable to free ourselves, much less others. The fully renounced mind is the foundation of path to liberation from samsara and enlightenment. It is the essential to achieving these states. So think, that you are meditating not just for your own well-being or peace of your mind or good reputation, but you are taking the time now to meditate and develop a fully renounced mind to reach the state of enlightenment, where you can most skillfully benefit all beings. The meditation on renunciation is based on all meditations of the lower scope. Think of what you have learned. Perfect human rebirth. Death and impermanence. Sufferings of the lower realms. Karma. Refuge. And the middle scope. The suffering of cyclic existence of all the six realms, as well as the general samsaric sufferings, the causes of suffering, the mental afflictions, the Four Noble Truths, the 12 links of dependent origination. The fully renounced mind is the mind that rejects or gives up not only suffering itself, but more importantly, the causes of suffering, the non-virtuous actions of karma, and the mental afflictions. To achieve fully renounced mind, we must understand cyclic existence thoroughly. We must understand in what way all levels of cyclic existence are in the nature of suffering. We must understand what is suffering and what are the causes of suffering. Contemplate the six realms of cyclic existence one by one, from the hell realms to the highest God realms. And specifically contemplate on the three lower realms. They call it the hell realm, the animal realm, or the ghost realms. And contemplate the causes of rebirth in each of these realms. And come to a firm conviction that there is no rebirth anywhere in cyclic existence that is not permeated with suffering and brought about by our own being under the control of delusions and obscurations of mind. And come to conclusion that you no longer want to ever be born in a cyclic existence again. Fix your mind on this conviction for a few minutes with a concentrated mind. Now contemplate the different types of suffering, the three of them we just discussed, the suffering of suffering, the changeable suffering, and the pervasive suffering. Come to the final and firm conclusion that all experience, all existence that is under the sway of karma and delusions is in the nature of suffering. Fix your mind on the conviction with concentrated mind. Contemplate the different mental afflictions one by one, especially the six root delusions: attachment, hatred, ignorance, pride, jealousy, doubt. These are the causes of our creating continuous negative karma and thus causes of our beginningless suffering. These mental afflictions have caused us again and again to take a horrible rebirth in the lower realms, suffering interminably and unbearably for eons and eons. And if we do not renounce them, reject them altogether, they will cause us to take similar suffering rebirths again and again in the future. Since you understand that to be liberated from all suffering means that you must renounce these causes completely and forever, come to the strong conclusion that you never want to be under the control of the delusions and the resultant karma again. Fix your mind on this conviction as long as you can with a concentrated mind. Having genuinely generated this thought within you, stop all thinking processes and simply remain concentrated on this determination with a single pointed focus, allowing it to absorb into your deeper levels of your mind for a minute. Let's dedicate this meditation, having made this effort to achieve a fully renounced mind. May I, in every moment, renounce and overcome the causes of suffering, that is, every mental affliction in my mind. May I be swiftly be liberated from samsara and progress to the state of supreme awakening in order to lead all other beings to their supreme state. Thank you. Before we end, we have a minute, 2 minutes. I want to do one thing. In our prayer book, that we have golden book, prayer book, page 141. Now that you have gone through this sessions, now see if it makes sense to you. See, when we come to the Kadampa Center, you'll go and say, well, let's do this prayer. And sometimes you read through it, right? Till Geshe-la explains you, right? But now that you've gone through this little bit of understanding, see some of it starts to make sense and see how it goes through the scopes. Okay? So very quickly, I'll read it through and you read it silently in your mind. So it starts with expressing the homage. So we, in the Lambrim, we teach about, you always show the lineage of teachings. Okay, I bow down to my perfect gurus. The promise to compose, okay, the essential meaning of the victorious one's teachings, the path praised by the holy victor, so we're giving some credit here. The great gateway of the fortunate ones desiring liberation. This I shall try to explain as much as I can now. Persuading to listen. We talked about the three parts and we talked about so many other things, how to listen, how to be open-minded, don't intellectualize, keep an open mind. So look at this. Those who are not attached to the pleasures of circling samsara, who strive to make freedom and endowments meaningful, who entrust themselves to the path of pleasing the victorious ones, you fortunate ones, listen with a calm mind. The purpose of generating renunciation, we just did this meditation, think about this, without the complete intention definitely to be free from circling, there is no way to pacify attachment, seek pleasurable effects in the ocean of circling. Also, by craving for cyclic existence, embodied beings are continuously bound. Therefore, at the very beginning, seek renunciation. Our 12 links. Craving, grasping, seek. how to generate renunciation. Freedom and endowments are difficult to find, and life has no time to spare. By gaining familiarity with this, attraction to appearance of this life is reversed. By thinking over and over again that actions and their effects are unbetraying and repeatedly contemplating the miseries of cyclic existence, attraction to appearance of future lives is reversed. Karma. Having definition of having generated renunciation, when by having trained in this way or that way, there is no arising, even for a second, of attraction to perfections of cyclic existence, and all day and night, intention-seeking liberation arises, then the thought of renunciation has been generated. The purpose of generating the mind of enlightenment, even if renunciation has been developed, if it is not possessed by the mind of enlightenment, it does not become the cause of perfect bliss of unsurpassed enlightenment. Therefore, the wise generate the supreme mind of enlightenment. How to do it? Swept away by the current of the four powerful rivers, tied by the tight bonds of karma, so hard to undo, caught in the iron net of self-grasping, completely enveloped by total darkness of ignorance, endlessly reborn in the cyclic existence, ceaselessly tormented by the three sufferings, thinking that all mothers are in such a condition, I generate or we generate the supreme mind of enlightenment. Okay, so I will stop there. I would like you to finish it on your own, and you will see that it goes through all the things we've talked about. The three suffering, the cyclic existence, the karma, the emptiness, the bodhicittas, which we will cover next time. You will see that everything that is covered in the three aspects of this path and how it is done so nicely and what binds you and why you should enunciate. Okay? Any questions? Thank you. I've called this a dedication. We dedicate this for the benefit of all sentient beings. Okay.
Hemant, for homework, do you want us to just continue with readings?
I do have something that I want people to really, it's not a lot to ask. I did mention reading on emptiness, page 102 in the Wisdom Energy book. The last in your Discovering Buddhism take-home readings that you have, only two or three pages, but it tells you, here it is, I marked them all, the outline of the path to enlightenment. It's the last one by Nick Raibusch. It will tell you the nature of the mind, how is it possible to attain enlightenment, precious human rebirth, everything you've gone through. It just kind of puts it in a nice little package for you. It just reemphasizes so you understand how the Lamrim is done in all three scopes. Okay? It even talks about refuge, emptiness, the whole thing. Just three or four pages. I will read about emptiness, maybe continue to read a little bit of bodhicitta, because that's the next class. And then we'll do next class. We'll talk about a little bit about establishing daily practice. I wanted to do it today, just no time. And we'll go through establishing daily practice, the sixth perfection. We'll do meditation on emptiness, and we'll end with a meditation on bodhicitta. And if time permitting, we'll look at the entire picture and see if there's anything left out in the three scopes. And we'll take a look at the three scopes as a one picture to see that you've covered everything.